In a chilling escalation, Russia's President Vladimir Putin has lowered the nuclear threshold, a stark warning in response to the United States' bold move in allowing Ukraine to deploy long-range missiles on Russian soil. This has tensions in Eastern Europe reach a fever pitch. Is the world teetering on the brink of a potential nuclear confrontation? Tonight, we delve into the dark clouds of war, exploring the implications of Putin's ominous decree and the West's strategic gambit. Joining us now, Olena Tregub joins us from Kiev, Tatiana Kukreva from Moscow. Spencer Critchley is an analyst who joins us. He's an author as well. Samit Joshi, one of India's foremost military analysts, and Brahma Chalani as well. Spencer Critchley, with just a couple of months left for this administration in the United States to remain in office, was it really necessary for Biden to go ahead with this huge gambit? And we've seen what the response from Moscow is.
Well, I want to underline the fact that I'm not an expert on military policy, and I try to be the sometimes lonely voice in the media wilderness of not pronouncing on things that I don't have expertise in. But what I can comment on is what I think this looks like from President Biden's point of view. As somebody who recognizes that democracy is in danger across the world, including here in the United States with the return of President Trump, former President Trump, to the White House. And I think President Biden finds himself in the position where he has to balance an extremely complex situation, an extremely potentially risky situation, without giving up on America's 2.5 century long commitment to liberal democracy. And that is how this situation looks from American perspective, at least people who see things more or less the way President Biden does, that the invasion of Ukraine is a tragedy for the people of Ukraine and has caused immense suffering for the people of Ukraine, but it also is a front in this worldwide attempt to roll back the, what I would say, civilizational gains of liberal democracy. And it's presenting the world with a choice. Do they want to stay with liberal democracy, or do they want to allow the expansion of authoritarianism?
Tatiana, do you see the change in Russia's nuclear posture as a serious threat, which could be a prelude to the potential use of tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine if strikes or more strikes take place deep inside Russian territory using American missiles?
Well, look, Vishnu, I don't see this as a threat. I see this as a very direct message. And I'm hoping that whoever is responsible for the things that we're discussing here, although I need to stress again that the beauty of the game that the U.S. leadership is playing is that there is still no confirmation, direct confirmation coming out of White House that they have, in fact, issued this, that they allowed these rockets to be used. We know that the Russian military shot them down last night, but again, there is no direct and open communication from the White House. It's all in reports. So they kind of haven't given the authorization, and yet these rockets are being fired. Yeah, it's a very comfortable gaming position. Doesn't sound like, doesn't sound extremely democratic, but it is a nice game.
So where does that leave Russia, Tatiana?
Sorry?
Where does that leave Russia? And my question on you know, this escalating to a potential use of tactical nuclear weapons, is that something which is a scary topic we need to start thinking about seriously?
Oh, I think so. I think we need to start thinking about this very seriously. The new doctrine states very openly that Russia can and will use tactical nuclear weapons in the case of aggression or if there's a critical threat of territorial integrity. We now know that Ukraine has fired these rockets into and let me bring you back to that report by the New York Times. It specifically stated that there has been allegedly permission given to use these rockets to target military targets, pardon my repetition, inside the Kursk region. Mm-hmm. We're now talking about these rockets being fired into Bryansk region. That's a very different region. It is close, but it's still a different region and a different direction.
Yes.
So we need to be talking about this very seriously, and we need to understand that these games that the U.S. is playing, however democratical they want them to look, they're very dangerous games.
All right. Olena, the use of these missiles or the potential use of these missiles comes at a time when we've seen Russian gains in Ukraine in the last couple of days particularly. Do you believe that Ukraine is in a position where it has to use these weapons because you are losing ground fast in some areas in the east, in Donetsk particularly?
Well, Russian troops have been advancing in the east of Ukraine for quite a while now. I think that decision of presidential administration in the U.S. to allow us to use particularly American weapons on Russian territory, it's a decision that we were waiting for actually more than a year. And I don't, of course... understand what Tatiana means by non-democratic. It's actually very democratic if a sovereign country is being aggressively attacked and Russian missiles are hitting all cities of Ukraine, and not only Russian missiles, but also my organization in particular analyzed ballistic missiles from North Korea that were hitting our peaceful cities. So there are no limits for Russia to what they do in Ukraine and to Russian partners. Iranian drones are attacking all over Ukraine as well. So, of course, it is normal for democratic countries, for countries who want UN Charter to be observed, who respect sovereignty and who want to help us preserve our territorial integrity, to help us.
Right.
It's totally normal. And they are not supposed to announce every day their plans about how they are going to do that.
Samir, militarily speaking, what do the ATACMS missiles that we are talking about bring to the table in terms of expanding the scope of conflict within targets in Russia?
Vishnu, this is not the first time that the ATACMS have been used by Ukraine. Since 2023, they have been used primarily in targets in Ukraine. But what is very significant is the escalation, that for the first time, ATACMS have been permitted by the United States to be used in the Russian territory, which everybody anticipated to be Kursk. But Bryansk obviously is an adjacent region, which has also been specified. Now, the significance of this escalation is largely to do with two facets. One is, you know, the geopolitics of it. President Trump has very indicatively told that he would like to end this war very soon. So there is parlays on both sides to kind of aggressively go after and hold on to territory before the negotiations start. Now, what has happened is Russia has been building up a huge manpower with Russian as well as North Korean troops in Kursk to take back a lot of territory which the Ukrainians, you know, had taken over since their summer offensive. So this usage of, or rather the induction of North Koreans into this particular sector is something which Ukraine has objected to, and maybe the U.S. has been convinced by finally this facet for permitting use of HIMARS and ATACMS by the Ukrainians to deep strike, you know, the rear of the Russian capabilities for command and control sites, your logistics dumps, your ammunition dumps. And in this particular case, it's been brought out that the target in question was an ammunition dump, which significantly was supporting the North Korean troops amongst, you know, other assets which the Russian forces were building up to. So I think this huge escalation is largely got a tactical facet in kind of negating or degrading the capabilities of this Russian counteroffensive against the Ukrainians, which are, you know, now well settled and kind of, you know, wanting to hold on to the Ukrainian, wanting to hold on to Russian territory in Kursk.
Dr. Chalani, do you believe that this is potentially the final set of offensives by both sides, Russia and Ukraine, that when Trump does come to power, and he said this over and over again, that, you know, we may see the beginning of a serious push towards ending this war, whatever that outcome may be territorially?
I wish that were true. The fact is that Biden's action exacerbates what is already a bad situation for all parties, including Ukraine, Russia, and the U.S. and its allies. Ukraine is losing the war, and Biden's permission to Ukraine for strikes deep inside Russia is unlikely to change the tide of the war. There's also in doubt that the U.S. has the industrial capacity to supply Ukraine these types of missiles in the numbers that would be needed to make a tangible difference on the battlefield. But the bigger issue is not the Biden permission to Ukraine to strike deep inside Russia. It is the fact that these types of missiles need U.S. navigational data and U.S. satellite reconnaissance for targeting, in effect giving the U.S. control over targeting. This is what enrages the Russians, because, as Putin puts it, this is NATO's direct involvement in the war. That's the issue. And I think that allowing Ukraine to fire into Russia at this stage, at the fag end of Biden's presidency, and look at the irony of it, Biden was not competent to stand for re-election because of his cognitive decline. But the Washington elites think that he is competent to escalate the Ukraine war just before he hands over the reins of power to Trump. He is actually undermining Trump's plan to end the war.
Spencer Critchley, if I was to ask you to crystal gaze, look into the future, assuming Trump does try and put an end to this war, how do you see the contours of a solution working out?
Well, first of all, let me push back on the idea of President Biden's cognitive decline. Certainly his age is showing, but nobody who works with him thinks there's any sign of actual cognitive decline, and his performance in office has demonstrated quite the contrary. The only way for President Trump to end this war in one day, as he has famously sworn he will do, and as he has sworn to do no end of other things, which he then proceeded absolutely not to do. The only way to end this war even quickly would be to just surrender. And Trump has shown a propensity to do that as well, as he did with the Taliban in Afghanistan, as he did when he abandoned America's Kurdish allies. There is no other way to end a war that quickly, unless you're just fantasizing as the deeply unserious and uninformed person that President-elect Trump, unfortunately, is.
All right. Look, I'd like to thank you all for joining us. I think we can all agree that this war needs to come to an end. The question is when, the question is how, and what would the outlines actually be of that. Thank you very much for being with us this evening.